This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldone. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 325 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
Okay, Summer, are you ready, Freddy?
Yeah.
Okay. On this episode of the Outlander podcast, this is an interesting one, not only because of what we're talking about, what we're doing. It is after we finish the Fiery Cross read-along and before we begin, oh my goodness, yet another season of Stars Outlander on television. So we decided it would be awesome because you know, and we know, everyone wants to hear about this, to have friend of the show, multiple now cookbook author, back to join us to talk about Outlander Kitchen. We want to hear all about it. So welcome, Teresa Carl Sanders.
Thank you both. It's great to be here.
As we've exchanged, we do have some things specifically we'd like to find out from you. But just in general, how has the cookbook world been?
Well, it's been busy. I'm sort of in a slow point right now, but it's been busy for the past year. It takes about a year to put 100 new recipes together. Actually, it would take longer if they gave me longer, but
It would take me way longer.
They gave me a year.
Oh, it would take me about a decade.
So it was really frenetic and busy in the summer. And then we sort of tied it all up just sort of in the end of June. But then after that, there's lots of stuff to do, lots of editing that the book goes through and everything gets put together. So right now, I believe it is printing. So my job is mostly done until it comes out.
And that date is in June 2020, correct?
And it comes out, yes, on June 2nd, 2020.
Ah, very good. So we will make sure to promote the tar out of it.
Oh, thank you.
Once we get it, we'll do anything. So whether it's just pictures or once we have it in our hands, all of it.
Okay.
So we thought we'd start with some questions that, as I said, we shared some basic things we'd like to know, and then follow up with something to revisit some questions that we had actually asked you the first time you were here to talk about OK One.
Oh, fun.
And that was T. Susan Chang's 7 Questions of a Cookbook Reviewer.
I kind of remember those. I don't remember any specifics, but I remember, yes.
I was researching. I was like, oh my gosh, we did this? So we'll do that toward the end because some of them may have been answered by the general questions that everyone wants to, more people want to know or more obvious.
Fair enough.
So I'll start when you were beginning, whether it was the idea or whether it was the actual research, whatever that process was like, OK2. Is it okay to call it OK2?
OK2 is what we call it. The editor and I call it back and forth. We tried to get OK2 on the cover. We tried to get it on the cover.
Oh my
but
God.
it just looked kind of, I can't remember my editor's word for it, but she came up with a good, it just didn't look very good. So it's OK2 is the shorthand, but it's Outlander okay. Kitchen to the New World and Back Again is the full title.
So it's okay to call it OK2.
Oh, there are so many OKs about okay. 10 years of okay have made everything okay.
Oh my. So, okay. Oh Lord.
So how did I approach? How did
I
approach?
Get away from okay.
No, it's everywhere.
Oh my gosh. Okay. See? Darn it. And so, in your approach to OK2, what was it like jumping back into book creation mode? Number one. And number two, how did the process or the general approach compare to with the first one?
Oh, but before that, at what point did you decide? What was the decision making that came into OK2? Was it
How did I come up?
I mean, was it had leftover recipes that didn't make it into the first one? Was it there's still more to mine from here that I have more things to say? Or what was the general idea? Was it just that this went really well? I want to do this again.
Exactly. And I did make one key decision when we published OK1, because that's what OK1 is. OK, the original OK is now, is OK1. that I would stop at A Breath of Snow and Ashes. So there are no recipes from any later books in, or any of the Lord John books, even if I had them on the website for years and years and years. We didn't use any of those in OK1. So that was sort of, I always set myself up just in case it went really well. I set myself up for having enough material for another cookbook. And then I took a break after Outlander Kitchen was all done sort of in 2017. I didn't do a lot. And then I've been walking in the woods and trying to figure out what I was going to do. And it was actually, full credit goes to Howard, my Englishman, because he just looked at me one day and said, well, it sounds to me like it's time for Outlander Kitchen too. And so I said, wow, that's a really good idea. And I emailed Susan, my agent, and she thought it was a really great idea. So basically I dove back into the books. And I love Lord John, and Lord John is always on my mind, and he's been on my mind in a number of walks, because he's just a funny guy, and he's got a dry wit, and I married a dry wit, so it's very much like having a best friend in the pages, and I enjoyed them so much, and he travels all over the world all the time. He's just, because he's got his own money, and he's often fighting in Germany and governing in Jamaica and things like that, which makes for a lot of fun food. So, and then when you tack on An Echo in the Bone and Moby, you've got actually probably, I think I counted, and it was 700 mentions of food in all those books.
So there's 700 recipes in this book?
Yes, exactly. Took me a while.
That's the LJ1 mm-hmm. book.
Well, that's what, yeah, my spreadsheet is full of OKs and LJs and Mobys and things like that. And color-coded, drives everybody crazy. Only I can understand it. And then, you know, that's where the process of narrowing things down begins. And it's a bit laborious, but I've done it the same way for a long time and it works for me. So I have it on a Kindle, all my books on a Kindle, obviously. So I highlight the passages as I go. And then once I'm finished the book, I go through it again and with those passages and make quick notes in my handwritten journal. And then I go and data entry it into a spreadsheet, which takes hours and hours. But this is actually secretly my very, very favorite part of the process, because this is when I get to play with a spreadsheet. And there's a part of my brain that absolutely is in nirvana every time it's on a spreadsheet. So, and I just move things around and the number one thing I do is look at the excerpt over and over and over and go through them and pick the best ones. And the best ones, I think, for all of us are the ones that tug at the heartstrings or make us laugh. And Diana uses food and family in gatherings really, really well. And so it's easy to pick out those really great passages and make recipes from those.
How did you decide on the 100 recipe cutoff, or was that based on between you and your publisher, or you and your agent or editor, or who put that down?
It's, I think it's a pretty typical count in a recipe, in a cookbook. I've seen now 75 recipes sort of seems to be the cutoff. I'm sort of at 100, and I think it's 107, just because I always have some basic recipes at the beginning of the book, just that get used throughout the rest of the recipes in the book. But I believe there are 102 excerpts from Diana in the cookbook. So that's it. I have a really great relationship with my editor. She trusts me a lot, and I get left alone to do my own thing a lot, which is almost unheard of in the publishing industry. And then once I've got what I think looks good, we look at it together, and if there's any holes or any spaces we need to fill in, then we do that in consultation together.
You said one of the decisions you made going into OK1 was your hard stop was the end of A Breath of Snow and Ashes.
Yes.
As far as for content, for inspiration. Then, of course, would pick up at book 7. And since only 7 and 8 at this point have been released since then, I have to ask, were you able to get a sneak peek at these?
No. No, sorry. I don't get any sneak peeks at all. So I don't even get little tiny rumors. The two processes are really separate. I believe our editors are in the same office, but there's lots of crossover for them, but there's no crossover for me or for Diana. Diana has, again, very graciously written a foreword for me, and she's had a look just to make sure that she approved of the entire manuscript for the cookbook. But other than that, we're on our own.
Has she ever submitted any recipes for your cookbook?
Well, not necessarily. I have requested her permission to do to use her enchiladas in the first book. So I did that. And she's got a couple of other ones that she's posted over the years. She had this crazy pomegranate garlic chicken once because she's got a pomegranate tree in her backyard. And it was just the craziest recipe I've ever tried. I didn't end up using it just because I thought that most people, it was just a bit too esoteric for most people. But and I got made fun of all over Scotland for the enchiladas and the spaghetti and meatballs when the first cookbook came out, just because at that point everybody was still, according to the TV series, Outlander was very much a Scottish thing. Hmm. And a lot of people weren't aware that we were about to move across an ocean. So I got a bit of flack in a lot of online tabloids for about a month there, which was amusing at some point. And it's also a very quick glance into what maybe Sam and Katrina put up with every day. Fortunately for me, it lasted 3 days and then it died away. And the next poor sod to get attention like that came along. But I do feel I've had a very brief glimpse into that kind of stuff. And I'm amazed at people that can deal with it day after day after day.
Are your recipes ever inspired kind of in a different way? Are you ever inspired by the show or by fans?
I've been inspired by fans for as long as I've been doing this. I love seeing pictures and I love seeing some of their own takes on recipes that aren't Outlander Kitchen ones, but that they share with me, especially on Twitter. I love it. The TV show, I've kind of decided I can't really do a lot with the TV show just because it's Sony and it's licensed, and then it starts to get a bit tricky. I could certainly do it on the blog. My problem is I've been doing this for 10 years and I'm starting to run out of Outlander Kitchen steam, if you know what I mean. So I saw someone had a great Boston cream pie on Twitter the other day, and that's from, I guess, is that from Brianna's birthday? It must be season 3. So, and that looked really, really good. And a couple of people have asked me about that one. I can't put it in a cookbook simply because I don't think Sony would like it. I've been very, very lucky to be allowed to do Outlander Kitchen, period. And that's mostly because Diana's influence, and also they're clearly based on the books.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's what sort of helps me get away with it without lots of other agreements and contracts and things like that.
So when you're doing recipes that you don't necessarily have experience eating, like the authentic recipe, how hard is it to develop those types of recipes? Because, like, for instance, we borrowed some recipes from the OK2 and we did the mocktopus, and I don't know what octopus tastes like. Obviously it's not supposed to taste like octopus, but I mean, if you don't have the experience of what it's supposed to be, how do you know that you got it?
Well, I know what octopus tastes like.
Well, of course
I've
you
eaten
do.
A lot of octopus in my, yeah, no. I have a story about a rural sushi bar in Japan where I was treated like a queen and given this the biggest piece of raw octopus you've ever seen in your life, and then spent the next 45 minutes trying to chew it and swallow and smile and talk and gesture all at the same time. And there was beer involved. But in the foreword coming out, Diana has said something very kind at the end, which is basically I approach this with a sort of joyous sense of adventure. And I think that's what Outlander Kitchen has become for me. You know, I actually give notes at the bottom of the recipe. If you really want to make octopus rather than mocktopus, I give you a quick how to boil an octopus, skin it, and grill it in a paragraph. But it doesn't necessarily have to be about that. And I like that the cookbook this time is even more inclusive than the first one, just because it has a lot. If I could give you a vegan or a vegetarian or a dairy-free or a gluten-free adaptation for the recipe, I did it. So all the notes contain those kind of adaptations, and it's more fun, I think, to eat like that than to take this really seriously and be eating pao saudi, which is always the one I reference, which is the sheep's head. I mean, nobody wants sheep's head soup. And when you read an 18th century recipe for it, and it starts with procure yourself a sheep's head and scrape out the eyeballs with a spoon, you know it's going to be adventurous, but do you really want to follow it through? That's always my question. Do you really want to eat this at the end of the day? No, you don't. And octopus upsets a lot of people, right? I find octopus, as a meat eater, I find octopus more and more challenging as I watch and learn about them. They're very intelligent creatures. And anyway, this is a whole discussion big thing that I shouldn't have even opened up. But anyway, I just wanted to make it more accessible for people so that they could have fun too.
Well,
there's a squid recipe. That's the other thing. There is a squid recipe, and it's real squid. So one octopus, one squid.
And what I found is when I was making the moctopus recipe, I didn't have a grill, first of all. So I had to modify. So I put my broiler on, and I had like a broiler pan, and I was trying to flip it and get the grill marks. And as I was following the recipe and cutting up the mushrooms, I immediately realized how this was supposed to mimic the octopus. Because the way of grilling, when you grill the mushrooms in this way, it makes them very chewy.
Yeah. Those mushrooms are chewy.
Yeah. And I remember saying to my sister, I was like, this may be too much for you. I'm like, this may be too real, because I don't know if you're going to be able to tell yourself these are mushrooms, because they are going to mimic the texture and consistency of octopus very closely.
They do. They're used a lot. They're king oyster mushrooms, and they're used a lot in Asian food for precisely that, because they give a chewy texture, a chewy, meaty kind of flavor as well, right? So
it was delicious. So just full disclosure, Summer and I, actually both of us, each of us chose a recipe, but Summer, bless her heart, and just bless her heart, she did all the cooking. So she did it and then passed it over. I think you took maybe a bite, you tasted it, right?
And here's the thing. It didn't taste like octopus. It didn't. But my brain couldn't get past how chewy it was. And it was too much for me as well. And I eat meat. And for whatever reason, that was a block in my brain. I was like, nope, 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 nope. But it tasted great. I just could not get past the texture.
You're freaking vegetarians and vegans out everywhere.
I know.
After she tasted it or took her bite, whatever it was, and she put the dish out and I had some. I did have some that the same day. It was still, because it's meant to be served kind of cold, right?
Yeah, colder room temperature. And the longer it sits, I think it gets nicer. But
I was about to go there. So when she made it, I had some that day. But then we were over at our parents' house. So before I went home, I got one of my mom's little Tupperware dishes and put it in there. I'm like, Summer, you want any? She's like, nope. It was too much. I think it was too much for her. First of all, she's not you're not really a tomato fan. And this, I think it was probably more too much for her than me. But anyway, so I took it, I was happy to take it all home. So I put it in the thing, took it home, and I meant to take it for lunch with me to work over the next few days, because it was quite a bit. So I forgot about it for 2 days.
Oh.
And then I found it and I was like, oh my gosh, I have this, all this wonderful greatness. And I tried it and it was, it was already good, but it was so good. It had marinated.
Yeah.
It was so good.
The mushrooms are like sponges, right? So it just sucks up all the flavor.
And then just because I was being, I don't know, more adventurous, what I did was I liked it by itself and I liked that it had marinated. But what I did was I made some rice and I just kind of served it over rice.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Just to kind of make it last longer.
Yeah, just to make it a meal out of it too, right?
Exactly. And so I took that and then I hope this didn't destroy. For me, it didn't destroy. It was amazing. But I also put a little bit of crumbled feta on there.
Oh, that sounds nice.
And it was, oh my gosh, it was the best. So yeah, so I enjoyed it day one, day three, and 4, 5, 6.
Hey, yay, that's excellent.
It was so good. And I think, it was something that when I chose it, my sister was like, "Are you sure?"
I'm like, I'm positive she picked it because it was like salacious, like the name of it, you know, like the name was risque, like Moctopus, like it had some like oomph to it and would make everyone go,
yeah,
oh.
It's on a list. It stands out. Yeah. On a list. It stands out. Yes.
It definitely stood out to me. Yes. And Summer, what was the other recipe that you chose?
I'm a classic girl. I went with the Kranichen. Like I want, I knew what Kranichen was. I've had it before, and I knew that all of the ingredients were not going to be suspect.
Summer.
But I did when I was beating the whipped cream because it's like flavored yummy whipped cream with raspberries,
and raspberries and oats.
So yeah. As I was beating the whipped cream, I turned to my parents and my sister and I said, I have a hand mixer, so I was using an electric mixer. And I said to my parents, I don't think that I like any of you enough to have ever made this for you without an electric mixer. I don't love anything enough to have stood here
no.
and hand beat this whipped cream.
Yeah, no, if you think about it, like Mrs. Fitz and Mrs. Bug would have had huge arms.
Oh my God, Popeye arms.
Oh my God.
My grandmother was an immigrant to Canada, but she was a dairy maid along the way. And my grandmother had the biggest biceps you've ever seen on a woman. Unfortunately, as she grew older, they got, they kind of got that old lady sag. But when you look at pictures of her, black and white pictures of my grandmother, she's got these huge arms, and it's just from slinging like 50 liter barrels of milk or buckets of milk around all day. It's amazing. So Mrs. Bug and Mrs. Fitz would have totally been the same. Probably had a Popeye right hand, right arm. And then a kind of withery little left arm that holds the bowl.
One baby arm and then one giant Popeye
arm.
Totally.
I would guess it's pretty standard to have the sections of like appetizers, entrees, those kind of organizers.
Yes.
How do you decide how many recipes per each of those organizing sections?
Or is there a formula for a cookbook must have X amount of this, X amount of this, and X amount of this?
I think there probably is a formula. Like a regular standard cookbook, the editor would be far more involved than my editor is. So she's not a cookbook editor. She's a fiction editor. So all of that I did that I've come up with, I've looked at industry standards along the way, but most of it is just me saying, well, it makes sense for it to be balanced, right? So, there have to be as many vegetarian recipes as there are at least the number of beef recipes, right? So because again, we're looking for inclusivity. And if you look at OK1, there's a lot, if you go flip to the back in the index, there's a lot of sweets and desserts in there. And that's not very industry standard. It's pretty heavy on desserts and sweets. But I've found that most of all of us, when we're talking about Outlander, like to eat sweet things. So there's a bit of a heavy bias on that. In OK2, it's a bit more balanced. But as you know, like when I'm looking at those 700 references, the first thing I do is sort them alphabetically. So there's a lot of bread, there's a lot of bannocks, there's a lot of porridge, there's a lot of things that are all the same. So the very easiest way to get rid of the first set of those is to go and find the best excerpt for bannocks out of all the books. So I maybe narrow it down then to two. So I have one from, let's say, Moby and one from a Lord John novel. And then I keep them there and I do the same all the way along until I'm then at a point where maybe I have 175 recipes left and I start to have to make cuts. And then that's where balancing the beef with the vegetable and the appetizers and making sure they're all sort of, there's usually six or seven of each, except in the main section where the beef, there's five, the chicken, there's six, probably just because people eat more chicken now. And it's just this sort of weird, it's sort of like, it's kind of maybe a bit like Jenga where you build it up and then you take them out, but you have to make sure that the whole table of contents doesn't collapse. It's kind of fun. See, I sound like a total geek, don't I? I sound like this spreadsheet geek from, but you're taking things out and then I've got a little, I've got a little list on the side that are my maybes that are just in case I need to add them back in. I can add them back in. But then there's another worksheet that has all of the things I've declined, and they're highlighted in red so that I don't forget I can't use them. And that's mainly because the excerpt was terrible, or it was a list of food, you know, at an LJ when he goes to the Germans and he's sitting at these big events and there's food and the food is just like two paragraphs long. It's not a very exciting excerpt to read, although I do use them because they come in very handy when I need a fish dish, for example. You got to fill in the cracks.
You keep mentioning the inclusivity of OK. I almost said OK 3. Wow. Because you know where my brain was going. Woo!
There is okay enough. Two. There is enough for OK 3.
Well, there is enough. OK, I was OK. I'll come back to that question in a second.
Because Diana hasn't finished writing either, right? So,
That's what I'm saying. So there's OK. Excuse me. I cannot get away from OK 3. So there's B's and then number 10, whatever that is.
Yeah.
Have you looked at any of the bulges?
Yeah. So all the bulges are in this second cookbook. So okay, I forgot to mention those as well. So what's her collection of short stories? Sorry, I've gone completely blank. The last one, Seven Stones to Stand and Fall. Yep. Yes. So all of the short stories or novellas that are in there are also included in OK 2.
Oh, cool. So you've basically, for OK 2, you had Echo and the Bone, Moby, all the Lord John, and all the short stories.
Exactly.
Okay. So you're basically, you've swept the deck.
I've mined everything I can. But there's lots of recipes that also didn't make, that are from all of those books, that didn't make it into a cookbook simply because I either ran out of room or there were too many beef dishes or whatever. So there's a few of those. And then, you know, Diana's got at least two more after B's, yeah?
All she's commented on or said is that she believes there are 10 and B's is number 9.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
But there's more like Ellen and Brian's story.
Yes, exactly. That's what I'm thinking of too, right? So, but I have... there'll be a few years to kill before all of that is done. So
speaking again of the inclusivity, it seems to be, I don't want to say a theme, but it seems to be something that you definitely, it was on your radar on your mind the entire time in development of OK 2.
Yes. That's because I just get so many fan questions about how to adapt things. And I get lots of requests from vegetarians and vegans, which are a growing segment of the population and one that it's not a fad. It's not going away. Mm. So, and they're all fans, and there's a lot of younger fans. You know, I'm a 50-year-old woman, but there's so, and sometimes those of us that have been around Outlander for a long time forget that. But there's lots of younger people coming up that don't eat the way we did in the 70s and 80s, and they want new things. And it's really kind of exciting for me to be able to do it too, because when you think of an Outlander cookbook, as many people have told me for 10 years, is, you know, an 18th century cookbook. Wow, that sounds really great. And the look on their I'm glad I got it through with my voice, but the look on their face is pretty funny. It's all porridge and bannocks, you see. But this just makes it more fun, I think. And the excerpts are still there. The excerpts are the same, and I think the food, it's a time travel story. I get away with a lot of stuff.
So do you think there's a point when inclusivity potentially makes your cookbook too long? Just because if you're giving options, like if every recipe has, and here's how you can make this keto, and here's how you can make this low carb, and here's how you can make this vegetarian. Is there a point when each recipe becomes like 5 pages long?
Well, exactly. That's a really good point. I don't do keto or low carb. Just because I had to cut it off somewhere. But I also cut off notes. So I only allow myself 3 notes at the bottom of a recipe for sometimes on a very rare occasion. There's a couple of 4s. But that means I have to write smart. So, and I'm pretty good, you know, writing cookbooks is a really technical thing. I always tell people it's like writing a VCR manual. Listen to me, I'm a 50-year-old woman with the VCR manual. But anyway, with the VCR manual, and it's, you know, one of them is a Toshiba, one of them's a Sony, and they're all slightly different, but it's all basically the same. The language is I'm limited in the language I can use. I do get a lot of guidelines around that. around the guide, the editorial guide of the particular publishing house, and they have certain ways you put a recipe together. So I have to follow that. And most of the recipes, I don't personally think a recipe should be longer than 2 pages. Ideally, you should be able to open the book and have both pages in front of you. Sometimes that doesn't work, so you have to flip a page. But the longer ones are 3 pages, and I hope there aren't any more than that, but I don't think there's many that are more than that. It's just too long, and people aren't interested in spending their whole day in the kitchen anymore, and it's not a lot of fun. It used to be fun. It's fun for me, but it's not fun for everybody. So again, that's another part of inclusivity, is trying to not make it so laboriously long and boring that you lose people. So
you would know this much more than I, because I did some research, but not as much as I promise you have done. as far as you said, those certain eating styles and many eating styles, or I guess there's 2 different types or maybe more. There's eating styles, which I would consider like keto or low carb or whatever the reason someone's doing it. And then there's eating styles, but I think there's a better word for it, that are like vegan, vegetarian, or, you know, kosher, whatever, that are either spurned on or chosen or adhered to for religious or ethical reasons. Not diminishing either choice or either one, but there are so many types of adaptations you could make. As you were saying, you had to stop it at some place. Did you do in your research, did you look at other TV or book inspired cookbooks to see if they were similarly inclusive?
Yes, I have noticed it. I will say that the other thing I've noticed is, in my knowledge, I'm the only trained cook doing this. So there's a lot of video game books out there, and I don't want to disparage them, and I'm not going to name any of them. Sure. Because they're beloved by fans. They're just a bit different. They're not published as cookbooks. They're published as souvenirs. So they're perfectly good cookbooks. Mm. But my approach to it is very much more along the cookbook line. I want to make sure, especially for Outlander, that this is a traditional style cookbook, because it fits the story, right? It fits the it fits the kitchen and the family and all that kind of stuff. It doesn't always fit, like Game of Thrones, for example. You know, well, I guess, I mean, big, but it's more a man's thing with lots of big cuts of meat and things like that. But the author of that cookbook has tried to do a lot of inclusive things too. And I think it's just to, you know, the more inclusive you can be, the more fans you get. And the more books you sell, and the more people you make happy. And I get a lot of emails and messages from people that are really grateful that there's a Brianna's Bridie that's vegetarian. You know, people can come up with these things, but not everybody wants to come up with their own recipe. And so sometimes it's not, yeah. I mean, in my head, it's really easy thing to do, because I do it daily every day, but I also don't go out to work and at a job and then have to come home and think about what I'm going to make for dinner. So I think it's fun. And it's certainly, it's expanded my culinary. We now eat 1 vegan and 1 vegetarian meal a night. That's our 2020 resolution. And it's going really well so far. Makes it fun.
And you don't have to do the inclusivity. I mean, I think people would have been just as content to be like, these are real. These are like traditional, you know, I just want traditional things that would have been made on the table at.
And I get a lot of those emails too. And I think I'm doing a decent job of trying to keep a lot of people happy. I don't do what you were talking about earlier, like specialty diets. But what I've tried to concentrate on is restricted diets. So people who can't do gluten, dairy is not a great one for me. I should avoid it more than I do. So, you know, and a quick cashew cream that's really easy actually to put together can change lots of things. It's really nice with strawberries, right? Like there's all sorts of things I've discovered by trying to make it more inclusive for other people.
And I like that, well, selfishly, because I'm a vegetarian for over 20 years. But I think on the one hand, you are making it more accessible by being more inclusive. And on the other hand, you can look at it from a business point of view. You can look at it from a fan outreach point of view. I mean, there's so many ways and there's so many reasons to do it. And I think that's and that's why I was curious about other books. I didn't even think about the authors being trained in the kitchen or not, or trained chefs or not.
No, like fictional cookbooks aren't taken very seriously from the cookbook world because of that. And not naming any, but if you write recipes for a living, like I do, when you look at those other recipes, you can tell that they weren't written by someone with, anyway, you can just tell.
Sure.
And that doesn't disparage them at all. But I really do want this cookbook to be taken seriously as a cookbook. So that's my approach is a little bit different.
So you've said that, you know, you don't have to go out of your house and work and then come home and make a meal. So what does your typical work day when you're working on your book?
When I'm working on my book, I get up and walk the dog, although I don't do that anymore, sadly. My dog passed away on Friday. He was a good boy. He's 18 years old and he was a wonderful boy.
Oh, my goodness. What a life.
Oh, he had a great life. So you can't be too sad for him. And that's where a lot of creativity comes in. Early in the morning, we're walking in the woods and things like that. And then I come home and have breakfast. And sometimes, a couple times a week, I go down to a friend's house for a swim. Swimming is really important to me. It's sort of like a moving meditation. And then I come back to work. And I, if I'm creating recipes, I usually work on 3 recipes a week, all at the same time. So I'll make them 2 or 3 times each during that week. And then be working on writing it up and taking any photos that I need to take and before I move on to the next set of 3 the following week. And that I don't work a long time every day. I sort of work between 10 and 2 or 10 and 3. And then I'm done for the day. And then that's when I'll go back into the kitchen again and start experimenting or just cooking our dinner or doing whatever. I spend a lot of time in the kitchen almost every day, even when I'm not working on a cookbook.
That's actually an interesting point. So you have specific time that you're experimenting and working on recipes. And then does that ever bleed? And maybe this is what you were saying. Does that ever bleed into when you're making your own meals for you and your husband?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and I mean, when I'm writing a cookbook and doing all those recipes, that's all we eat.
Oh, wow.
We eat.
I mean, otherwise I could get it. I get it. It would be crazy expensive.
Well, it's expensive. There's only 2 of us. If it's a stew, 3 stews in 1 week, holy doodle. So I also, I live on a small island. I think most of us know. So, we have a Facebook page and I have when I am writing and, or when I'm recipe developing, I put a cooler at the top of our driveway. And then whatever leftover food I have from the day goes into there. And then I post it on the island Facebook page and whoever comes by first gets it. As long as, and everybody has to promise to return the Tupperware. Otherwise I come after them.
Have you ever advertised a meal that no one wanted?
I think there were a couple that I didn't want to put up online. So instead of that, I sent a private message to a group of people that I knew were safe. But I can't remember what it was. I can't remember. And sometimes also if it's big and there's a lot of people on this island that need a bit of help because it's a really rural place and there's not an easy, jobs are hard to come by. I've also got my selection of like when I'm making a big shepherd's pie or something that I've had to take a picture of. And so I've got this whole like huge 9x13 pan of shepherd's pie, except one scoop artfully taken out of it for the picture. Then I've got a set of families in mind that I often private message just to pass the food around. Because to be honest, a lot of the same people swing by and pick up that food because it's on their way or whatever, right? So I try and get it around a little bit. And I get lots of feedback from people that way too.
So feedback, does your husband ever count? Do you ever take his feedback to heart?
He is my number one taster and he's got a way better palate than I do. Like he's way better. I'm really good at cooking, and I know instinctually, I know what things go together and how they should taste, but I think his palate is more sophisticated. And he's my first, and he's my first judge always. So he, much like, let's say, Stephen King, Tabitha King, his wife, she's the first one to read everything. And Howard's always the first one to taste after me. As long as I deem it safe, then he sticks his spoon in there.
So what did you learn when putting together the first book that influenced how you put this one together?
The first thing I learned was the joy of the spreadsheet from a production tool for a recipe, just table of contents, keeping it straight, all that kind of stuff, and communicating with people. Rebecca, the wonderful photographer who takes all the main shots for both Outlander Kitchen 1 and 2, lives in Victoria, which is not very far from me, but once you take the ferry into account, it's 2.5 hours to get to her. So we communicate a lot online, and we have a photography spreadsheet. And we did that again for Outlander Kitchen 2. It works really, really well. What else did I learn? Oh, that's where I learned to do 3 recipes at a time. So I did that again. It's just, you know, the more experience... The next time I do a cookbook, for example, I'll be even better. I have even more systems in place. And the other thing I think I learned the most about was how to build an index, which is really uninteresting for most people because it's a really technical thing. But I got a lot of joy out of writing my own index only because I saved myself thousands of dollars. So in the production stage. So I did that again too. And yeah, it's always a learning experience. I think that's why I like this so much. And it's individual learning. It's not a classroom. It's just me. And as I get older, I realize that that's sort of who I am. Beyond the socialized me, there's the me that just likes to work with myself and sort of have this big project that I can feel slowly we're marching towards the end of it and getting it, bringing it all together. It's really exciting the last week when you bring it all together. It's amazing.
Now, in my recollection, when OK One was getting put together, you had a call out for like test kitchens. Did you use the same testers this time around or did you?
I did. I asked them all if they would do it again and they said yes. And I was so happy and deliriously happy that we did it all again. So again, that's another thing I learned. And it was really, you know, last time I think I had 800, 900 responses to that call for testers. And I promised I would read every application and I did. So that's not something I necessarily want to have to go through again. And I have a good mix of people from all over the continent that give me good feedback. A few Canadians and then some Americans, and I have a couple, and I have a vegetarian, and I have a gluten-free girl, and I have all this kind of stuff. So works really well. They're a great group of people, and it's hard work. And the other reason I didn't choose new testers this time was because these people knew how much hard work it was. 6 weeks, 3 recipes a week, and some of those things are expensive to buy too, right? The only thing they get is a autographed copy of Outlander of the cookbook from me and Diana. So I lug around 12 copies of Outlander Kitchen when I go down to Scottsdale. So Diana can sign those for me. And that's the only remuneration those testers get. And they're so amazing. They do such a great job.
Let's revisit briefly. I don't think we need to spend as much time on it as we did the first time around. But briefly, the 7 questions of a cookbook reviewer. And these questions were much more, I think, germane to OK One because it was the first of its kind in the Outlander space. And now I wouldn't guess or expect any of the questions to have, maybe they will have changed or the answers will have changed. I would expect them to be the same or stronger, whatever. Question 1 that T. Susan Chang uses, the 7 questions of a cookbook reviewer, on her site, Cookbooks for Dinner. Question 1 is it useful? And to that, she says, this means, would an enthusiastic home cook be able to find recipes in this book that would satisfy them for a week straight of cooking?
Yes, totally. I think if you go to Amazon and you look at the reviews of OK One, You'll find people repeatedly saying that it's, and it makes me so proud and so happy, that it's on their counter and they use it repeatedly. A lot of stories about even husbands going, flipping through it and picking out things and things being used regularly. Like it's not just a special celebration meal, but, you know, chicken fricassee, it's slow cooker chicken fricassee gets served once a week in some households. It's really, it's amazing actually to think all those people are cooking my recipes. It makes me kind of proud.
That is nice.
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling, yeah.
And that is something that you absolutely answered differently because now you have this experience with having been a successful author. You know what I mean?
Yes. So
that's, you have this this to look back on, and that's amazing. And going forward, yeah, I would also hazard a guess that since you have already done it, the OK 2 will be similar.
I hope so, yeah.
Question 2, is it thoughtful? And T. Susan Chang to that writes, this means, has the author thought of the reader's needs, hard to find ingredients, and guidance as to where to find them, and clarifying tips in the instructions? Do the head notes help you cook the recipe?
Yes, I mean, I think
that we made that clear in the course of the conversation that we just had.
I think, yeah, without tooting my own horn, yes, I think, yeah. And that, I mean, a lot of that is around inclusivity and all that kind of discussion that we had earlier, for sure.
Question 3, is it new? And to that, she says, are at least a majority of the recipes really new?
Yes. So in OK1, I can't remember, but there were a number of recipes that were, had been on the website for years. And some of them were rejigged a little bit for the cookbook, but they were basically the same as they had been for years. But there were more, it was, I think, 75% new recipes. This time, I would say it's 95% new recipes.
Oh my gracious.
So it really took, yeah, that's when I talk about the time crunch of the year, it was, it's a lot of recipe. I wouldn't do it again. Like I would ask for a 3 more months next time, just because by the end I was really tired and really done and I hated food and all. The only thing I would eat would be French fries at the pub.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that went on for a few weeks actually, where the only thing I could eat was something made by anybody else, even if it came out of a package at 7-Eleven. Like that was better than me making it. I couldn't. So, yeah, it got a little stressful there at the end.
Question 4, and I think we know the answer to this. Does it tell a story?
It does. And that's the number one thing I've read about cookbooks coming out now is publishers want them to tell the story. So not everybody uses cookbooks to cook from anymore, but they do love to sit in bed or on the couch and flip through them and dream about the food that they may make. But if it tells a story and it can keep you occupied even without cooking, that's what a lot of readers and cooks are looking for now. That's why cookbooks are still, they're actually still very popular. They do very well in sales because of the switch to sort of storytelling. Well,
question 5, I think there's a number of ways to read this or to answer this. Question 5 is it well designed?
I did my best. I did my best. It follows the same template as Outlander Kitchen 1, so people will be familiar with it. And I think one of the reasons I enjoy this so much, doing this so much, and why it's been relatively successful is I'm an organized person by nature. So that I like to put systems in place and things like that, and I really like to write those recipes so that it is just like a VCR repair manual, so you can follow it step by step. And I get a lot of nice feedback on that to people saying that they find the recipes easy to use just because they're well laid out.
Ginger, I feel like you should call this segment Toot Your Own Horn because it kind of...
Yeah, no kidding, eh? I know. The little voice in the back of my head as I'm speaking saying like, ooh, whoa, back up, turn right.
No, here's a chance to toot someone else's horn.
Okay.
So the question, is it well designed? Absolutely. You're like, you're the CEO of this, but it involves more than just yourself. You are predominantly, you're the one who's doing the layout and the, you know, and all the content. However, one of the most important things for the eyeballs and for the tummy is or are the photographs.
Totally.
So how, tell us, I know we talked about Rebecca before, tell us maybe a new listener who hasn't yet listened to the first interview, which you should go do right away after this. how important, or tell us a little bit about Rebecca and how important are amazing photographs for your food, for a cookbook to tell a story.
Photographs are everything, especially the cover. And so Rebecca did, I mean, she hit it out of the park on the first book, the cover. I think a lot of bookshops had it on display shelves just because it was so beautiful. And it really draws people into the food. Her photos are magical. And the most magical thing about Rebecca is she cooks and she styles and then she shoots all that food herself in her apartment in Victoria. And her photo studio is seriously a 3x5 table that she's got set up by the basement door where the light comes in, and it's really nice. And she does amazing things with that. And it wouldn't be the book it is without Rebecca. Rebecca Wellman. RebeccaWellman.com. Mm. She's actually just writing her own cookbook right now with with another fiction author from Victoria, BC.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So they've been over in Paris shooting pictures of beautiful French produce in Paris and all sorts of really great things.
So who cooks prettier food, you or Rebecca?
Two totally different things. When Rebecca cooks, she quite often plays around with the instructions so that at the end, the food looks nicer, if you know what I mean, than a home cook would. Because, you know, a shepherd's pie can, brown food can be difficult to make look nice. And Outlander Kitchen contains a lot of brown food just because of the historical context of it. You know, she cheats a little bit and makes things and uses and brushes things with extra butter or whatever it is. She has a few tricks to make food look and stay fresh if, you know, because sometimes it can take an hour or an hour and a half to get a photo. It's incredible how long it takes.
How was this, the cover of OK2 decided upon?
Rebecca did it again. Mm-hmm. And so she comes up with a proposal for the cover. And generally, authors have very little control over the cover. I'm really lucky because I got to liaise between Rebecca and my editor in New York. And so Rebecca did all of that. She did it all over a weekend. It's a beautiful photo. It's this. She came up with the same sort of idea of having the same silhouette of the woman from the first cover. And that is her sister-in-law on the cover of both one and two. And it's a different kind of photo, but it's really, really, I really like it. It's got movement in it and apples and fire. And
I'm concerned about the movement of food. I'm imagining food falling off of a plate or being poured into something.
Well, I actually, when I first put it up online on social media, I had two people come back to me and say, oh, it's so beautiful, but you do know the model's hand is blurry. And it is blurry. And that's where the movement comes from. But I would say probably Rebecca, I just a guess, she probably took 250 shots of that and they picked one. So, yeah. Lots, and that's why digital photography is so great, because there's no film involved. You can literally take 300 shots of the same bannock until you get it just the way you want it.
So question six, speaking of focus, is it focused?
Nah, it's all over the place, man. No, it's pretty focused on LJ, the bulges, and then the two big books. So yeah. I would say so.
Question seven, is it the best of its kind? Well, we know it's the only of its kind, but what T. Susan Chang says about this question is, or at least the best that I've seen. What a hard question this is to answer. The answer is almost never yes, but asking it helps me sort out my thinking. If the answer is, it just might be, that's a huge endorsement right there. Unquote.
I think it's better than OK1 in certain ways. Just because I knew what I was doing and I could plan a little bit better. And the photos are as beautiful as they were in OK1. They're better suited to the rest. Anyway, It's better laid out. Let's just say that. I don't think it's the best of its kind, but I think it's certainly the best, my very best effort. How about that?
Well, we could say it's the best. It's the only of its kind.
It's the only Outlander Kitchen 2 cookbook there is. Okay, too.
So I want to give a shout out to your website because your website is awesome. I love this.
Oh,
I love
you.
The search engine quality of it because I was just sitting here thinking, has she ever done like a haggis recipe? And I was like, I don't want to ask that without checking. And then I went to your website and I was like, I can literally type in haggis and it'll tell me if there's a recipe on here for haggis. And what it tells me is that
which there isn't.
There is not because you do not want to stuff per your story. You're not interested in stuffing a sheep's stomach. But the question is,
so many people do it better than me. You know what I mean?
Will you ever include a recipe for it?
I would include a recipe that uses it. I'm just not going to make it. You know, like, hey, I've had awesome haggis pierogies. I've had awesome haggis empanadas.
Haggis pakora.
I have had a haggis pakora. I've had a haggis nachos.
Oh, my.
I've had a haggis pizza. I've had, yeah, and I like it. You know, I mean, here it's different here. It does taste different in North America than it does in Scotland because we don't use lungs because it's against the health regulations. But you know, maybe Outlander Kitchen 3. If there is an Outlander Kitchen 3, I promise to put a haggis recipe in it.
I want to know. So question, I've been noticing a lot with the run up to season 5 that, you know, you've been on social media, you know, kind of not grilling, but like throwing it out there. What are you guys cooking? What one of these recipes, what one of OK Kitchen recipes are going to be, you know, at your premiere party? And what is,
yes.
Have you been keeping track of the answers? And is there a clear winner?
There's no clear winner yet. I actually have to come. What I'm going to do after I hang up from you ladies later is come up with, I've got a list of all the Fiery Cross recipes. So I'm going to put them into a post and give people some ideas of how to put them together. Pizza's probably the easiest. It's Roger and Bree's pizza, where they imagine what the world, cause they're always talking about what they miss, like a nice big cold Coke and a slice of pizza. And there's Scotch eggs. There's some really, really good ones that make for good viewing fare, if you know what I mean. There's no drinks, though. That's the only problem. I don't have any alcoholic beverages, so we'll just have to stick to whiskey.
Seems safe.
Coming up on season 5, is there anything from the book, because that's all we know right now, the show hasn't come out yet.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you are looking, extraordinarily looking forward to see if they keep it or change it or whatever?
It makes me sound really macabre, but I am really looking forward to seeing how they treat Roger's storyline and the hanging and his voice and all those things and what they'll do. You know, I've been slightly unsatisfied with the way Roger's been dealt with so far. So I look forward to maybe an arc, like a redemption arc maybe for him, but nothing really specific. If they stay away from the opening, which is, you know, dirty nappies and wet shifts for 200 pages in the Fiery Cross, if they stay away from that, they get my vote. Like, they get my positive vote. So
awesome.
Although there's some really nice potato fritters in that little scene there. So maybe if they could just stick with the potato fritters.
And sorry, I said it was one question. Now it's two. I lied. Do you plan, even though I, from what I understand, you're not, you know, you're not working with Starz at this moment, but, or Sony, but, or do you plan on after you watch them going through, and if there's something like they had a specific meal at River Run and they, you know, it was something that you could either tell just by viewing it because of your eye, or that someone straight up mentioned it, would you then maybe create a blog post per episode, either outlining what the food was and sharing stuff from your books?
I think it would be fun to do, you know, once or twice. I haven't written a blog post. If you check out my site, it clearly says that I'm no longer updating that blog. And again, it's not for lack of love of Outlander. It's simply 10 years long. And it's hard to fathom that we've all been doing this for 10, 11 years or 9, 10 years. And it's just, you know, I've got another iron in the fire that I'm really excited about. And I really hoped I ginger and summer. I actually know what it is, everybody. But I really hoped I could talk about it, but I can't. But I will be able to share it as I'll share it as soon as I'm able. That just means I'm not leaving Outlander behind, but I'm just sort of broadening my horizons and taking on new projects, because 10 years of Outlander food is a long time.
Yeah, and we can't wait until...
It's a long time.
It is a long time to be steeped in that.
Well, it's one time period, right? So, I mean, you reach a point where you're like, I'm ready to try some new food.
Well, yeah. And I mean, and even I'm lucky because at least I get to play around when they come back into modern time, and I get to play around with a few things. Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe a better thing would be for me to find a really wicked recipe that already exists online and share that recipe for everybody, so that if they're interested in making, for example, a Boston cream pie, they could do that. Part of the magic of my blog post, I think, is the excerpt, right? And in that you lose the excerpt on TV.
That's true.
And I still haven't figured out how to put a YouTube video into my blog. Because I'm a 50-year-old woman. So you could just take a short clip from the movie and someone should do that. Hey, there's an idea if you're looking for Outlander food.
Well, we cannot wait, and we will, as always, promote the high heck out of it once you're able to share your next stuff. We can't wait till that comes out, because we're just so.
It's super exciting. It's super exciting, and I don't mean to be obnoxious. Yeah, it's super exciting, and I don't mean to be obnoxious. But if I could share it, I would.
No, it's we can't. I can't. I don't even want to say. I don't want to even give any modifiers, because I don't want to have your thunder. I'm so excited. That's all. I'm so excited for you. Wow, two books. 10 years in the making altogether. And I think this is actually your third visit here. Two proper interviews on the books. And then I would think we had you on first to join us.
Yes, we had. I have for a read along. Yeah. I was on
and
for a read
along. Yes. I don't remember. I did look it up. I'm not going to lie. We talked about like Black Jack Randall's Lavender Fudge. I think that's what Summer made.
Mm. Made. Yes, that's right.
So we're going to have to make that again, please. It was so good. It was so good. But so we could chat all day, and I know we don't have all day. I think we'll begin to wrap it up here. So when you're ready to share, we will amplify it till the outer planets.
Awesome. Thank you, ladies.
So happy for you. So excited for everything that's coming. And we can't wait till OK2 gets in our hot little hands. And thank you so much again for joining us, Teresa Carl Sanders.
Thank you so very much for having me. And just one little plug, Outlander Kitchen 2 is now currently available for pre-order.
Oh.
So, and pre-orders help authors by guaranteeing sales. So anyone who wants to pre-order, go for it. You'll save a little bit of cash off the cover price.
And is that best to do on Amazon?
You can do it online, or you can do it online, or you can do it at your favorite brick and mortar bookseller. If you prefer to support small booksellers, just go in and order it from them, so they'll have a copy ready for you when it's out on June 2nd. Excellent tagline.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and we hope you have a wonderful week. And
a wonderful year,
have a good
year,
season.
Day,
enjoy
week.
The next season.
How are going season. In, man?
Decade.
Oh, I didn't ask. Are you going to be doing any kind of mini tour?
I am doing a mini tour. I'm going down to, funnily enough, Governor Tryon's palace in New Bern, and they're putting on an event. So I'm giving a chat. It's a whole Outlander weekend, but part of which I'll be giving a chat, and we'll have a signing there. And then I've got another stop coming up in, most likely we're organizing Alexandria, Virginia, as well as Portland, Maine, funnily enough, a strange choice, but
that is rather
but
strange.
It should be fun. But it's very strange. It will be, I'll put, as soon as I have that, all that kind of stuff, I'll put it up on my Facebook
Perfect.
Page.
Okay. Well, have a great rest of your, I almost said weekend, but week, like I said, season. Okay. Season, Ginger. take care, and we will have you back. Don't wait till OK3 to come back now.
No, she may.
Oh no, please have me back. I always love coming chatting
and
with you guys.
Sorry, I know I keep saying let's wrap it up, but then I have another question. Okay, so you're officially invited and you can have first dibs because we have not even opened it to the public yet. You officially have first dibs on whatever chapter or chapters plural. If you would like to join us for our A Breath of Snow and Ashes read along, I can't.
Oh, lovely. That's actually, I think, my favorite. So I will find
it. Damn good.
It's pretty yes. darn good. It hits all the heartstrings all the time, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I will, I'll have a flip through the table of contents.
Just do that. And I just was listening to it. I do my own little read-alongs as we go. Summer and I do our own proper read-along. And then I'm always cycling through it on my own in at whatever pace, like helps me fall asleep, or I listen to it when I'm stuck somewhere. And right now, literally this morning, the chapter, and I'm not going to say what it was, but you guys know, The World Turned Upside Down chapter. And once again experienced summer's rage. That's all I'll say. Okay. So on that note, yes, please get back to us. Listeners don't need to hear this, but hey, I'll leave it in. Yeah, let us know what chapters you'd like. Okay,
I will
very
do.
Good. Okay, awesome. Thank you guys. Thank you so much for being with us, Teresa. And yeah, for joining us, if I could get that word out. And thank you, dear listeners, so much for listening. We are super excited about the next episode, because the next episode's going to be what, Summer?
Episode 1 of season 5. I don't know why I couldn't
find
those
words. Thank you guys
so
much. Woo-hoo! Yes, it's okay. Thank you guys so much. And you'll be, we hope, what do I say?
We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you so much. I can't do it. Thank you so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode.
Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20, OUTLANDER20, for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.